Hi, welcome back to Joe Blogs. This video is an update on the situation in China. If you've been following the channel, you'll know that we've been covering China for the last 12 months or so, and initially all of the problems were related to the housing sector. However, the general economy in China has been on the downturn for the last few months, and we've now had the release of all of the COVID restrictions. And that's having a really big impact on the economy because China has been in a form of lockdown for the last 3 years. And the fact that they've now released all of these restrictions is resulting in what's effectively the first wave of COVID infections all across the country. So this is obviously old news if you're in any other part of the world, because we had our first wave of COVID infections back at the start of 2020. And then we had the second wave and the third wave. And obviously that had really detrimental impacts on what was happening in the economy for all of those countries. But China are really going through this for the first time. And so we've got a double whammy in terms of a downturn in the economy at the same time as we're now having workforce issues where people actually can't get to work because they're ill, they're having to go to hospital or just stay at home and isolate. So in today's video, we'll have a look at the latest figures that have come out from China for December, which don't look too good. These are below current expectations. We'll have a look at what's going on with housing, because the housing and real estate sector remains a really big part of the Chinese economy. And until that recovers, we won't really see the Chinese economy firing on all cylinders again. I'll give you an update on our old friends Evergrande. If you've been a long-standing follower of the channel, you'll know that I was posting a lot of videos on Evergrande this time last year. That was the big issue for everybody then globally. Evergrande has more than $300 billion worth of debt, and it was failing. It was going into a situation where it had no liquidity whatsoever, and it looked like it was going to take the Chinese economy down with it. But then Russia decided to invade Ukraine, and everybody turned their attention away from China and to what was happening in Eastern Europe. But Evergrande is still kicking around, and there's now updates on the situation. The chairman has recently sent out a letter to everybody, so I'll give you an update on what's going on with that and the sale of their headquarters. We'll have a brief look at the current situation with regards to COVID, and then finally today I'll wrap up with my summary. So what I think is likely to happen in the Chinese economy over the course of the next 3 to 6 months, and what the impact of that will be on the global economy, because China is the second largest economy in the world after the USA and remains a critical part of the global economy because of its sheer size. So before we get started on all of that, if I could ask you for a thumbs up at some point during this video, if you're enjoying the content, please subscribe if you haven't done so already. Don't forget, I always include chapters, so if you don't have time to watch everything, you can pick and choose what you'd like to see. And if you would like to support the channel, please have a look at the links below, where you'll find links to Patreon, Buy Me a Coffee, YouTube Super Thanks and Membership, and Amazon shopping links. And once again, thank you so much to everybody that has supported the channel. I genuinely appreciate it. China's factory activity shrank for the third straight month in December, and at the sharpest pace in nearly 3 years, as COVID infections swept through production lines across the country after Beijing's abrupt reversal of the antivirus measures. Now, the Purchasing Managers Index, which is a metric that we've talked about a number of times on the channel before, is a survey of all of the purchasing managers in major corporates all across a number of countries, but including China. And the key thing about this index is whether or not the number is above or below 50. If it's above 50, then that indicates growth. It indicates that everybody is expanding. If it's below 50, then that indicates that everybody's contracting. People are buying less for their business. And so going forward, that means that you're not going to grow as fast. If you haven't bought in as many raw materials, then obviously you can't make as many things, and therefore your output will be lower, and so will be your revenue. Now, the official Purchasing Managers Index fell to 47 from 48 in November, according to the National Bureau of Statistics. And this drop was the biggest since the early days of the pandemic in February 2020. Analysts have identified surging COVID infections causing temporary labour shortages and increased supply chain disruptions in the country. Cameron Johnson, a partner at Tidal Wave Solutions, a supply chain consulting firm, stated that most factories are way below where they could be at this time of year for orders for next year, with a lot of factories being around 50% of their usual order levels, but some being as low as 20%. Weakening external demand on the back of growing global recession fears amid rising interest rates and inflation and the war in Ukraine are also slowing down demand. China's National Bureau of Statistics said that 56.3% of surveyed manufacturers reported that they were greatly affected by the epidemic in December, up by 15.5 percentage points from November. The Non-Manufacturing Purchasing Managers Index, which looks at service sector activity, fell from 46.7% in November to 41.6% in December, which is also the lowest reading since February 2020. Logistics snags lengthened supplies delivery times for the sixth month in a row, while employment in the manufacturing sector contracted for the ninth consecutive month due to muted production levels and difficulty sourcing workers amid the virus outbreak. Some analysts are anticipating labour shortages and increased supply chain disruptions, combined with softer customer demand, which may drive a further fall in production over the next few months, even if mobility curbs are eased. China's economy grew by 3% in the first 9 months of 2022 and is expected to stay around that rate for the full year, which represents one of the worst years in almost 50 years. So as you'll be aware if you follow the channel, the Chinese property market represents around 25% of the total GDP in China. And the main reason for this really relates back to the history of what's been happening in the country over the last 30 years. Investments are restricted and limited in China, but in the 1990s, the authorities announced that individuals were able to buy property, and this led to a huge increase in demand. Everybody wanted to buy private apartments. And as consumer demand increased, the size and number of property developers also increased rapidly. And we saw these huge companies building massive apartment buildings all across China. And the explosion in demand drove up prices, and this became a no-risk gamble from Chinese consumers' perspective. If you bought property, it was almost guaranteed to increase in value. So people started buying multiple properties, they were buying off-plan, and often they were handing up to 100% of the purchase price over to developers before these apartments had even been built. So this was a genuine gold rush. Everybody wanted property, and they couldn't get enough of it. So as money poured into the sector, the level of employment increased dramatically, and this is why it became such an important part of the Chinese economy. Now, unfortunately, a few years ago, the Chinese authorities decided that they needed to rein in some of the developers who were over-leveraged. They'd taken on far too much debt. They'd become illiquid. And so they introduced a policy called the Three Red Lines. And these were basically three tests to make sure that all of the property developers were solvent. And unfortunately for many of them, as soon as the tests were introduced, they failed all three of them. And the most highest profile of all of them was Evergrande. Now, Evergrande is a massive property development business, but it also has a huge amount of debt, over $300 billion. And around $22.7 billion of that is overseas. So that's been taken on by companies outside of China. So the introduction of the Three Red Lines clipped the wings of all of the developers. But the problem that then caused in the market was that those developers couldn't complete all the unfinished apartments. So all of the consumers in China were unable to take ownership of what they'd paid for. And this led to a drop in confidence in the markets. And we've seen falling house prices in China. And this is now causing a massive problem for the Chinese economy. Because if you've got 25% of your economy dependent on property, and property goes into a downward spiral, then that's going to drag down your whole economy. This chart shows the movements in new build house prices in China over the last 12 months. And new build is the predominant market in China. That's what most people are buying. There's very little trade in second-hand houses. Most people are buying off-plan new apartments that have been recently built. And what this shows is that house prices have been falling month on month since May 22. And the percentage reduction in house prices has been increasing throughout that period. And it's now been announced that house prices have fallen at a faster rate than anticipated in December. So this is clearly bad news for China and its economy. And it's something that's going to be very difficult to turn around for the Chinese authorities, because they deliberately put the brakes on this sector a couple of years ago. They're now trying to revamp everything and trying to get it going again. But unfortunately, the Chinese consumers appear to have lost confidence in property as an asset class. And that's now holding back all of these new sales and leading to a reduction in prices. So one of the big unanswered questions remains, what is going to happen to Evergrande? Will the company survive? Will it be able to find some form of restructuring deal, agree some sort of resolution with its lenders, or is it going to hit insolvency? Now, that's a question that we've been asking for the last 12 months. And Evergrande has been continually dodging bullets, keeping a low profile, not putting forward any proposals. And really, there's not a lot that anybody can do about it. The Chinese banks are unlikely to enforce on any of the security that they have because the Chinese authorities don't want to have the biggest corporate failure in history on their hands. And equally, Evergrande are unlikely to declare any sort of insolvency themselves. So what we've got is a muddling along. And the latest update on this situation is that Evergrande has stated that it will put forward a restructuring proposal to the lenders at some point during the spring. Evergrande expects to firm up debt restructuring proposals by the end of February or early March. Lawyers for the developer told a Hong Kong court, which adjourned a winding up lawsuit against the developer to March 20, 2023. An investor in Evergrande's unit, Fang Chibao, an online real estate and automotive marketplace, filed the winding up petition against the embattled property developer in June because it had not honoured an agreement to repurchase shares the investor bought in FCB. Evergrande and its major offshore creditor group have expressed their opposition in the winding up petition, saying the developer was actively pushing forward with the offshore debt restructuring work in the interest of all creditors. During the recent hearing, Judge Linda Chan said Evergrande would need to convey something much more concrete on its debt revamp process by the next hearing. She directed Evergrande to file a progress report on the restructuring process 14 days ahead of the next meeting. As part of the options being considered for the restructuring proposal, Evergrande is looking at using domestic assets and offering them as additional credit enhancement to secure offshore creditor approval. However, Evergrande's asset base appears to be diminishing rapidly, as its offshore assets have been taken over by creditors in Hong Kong, and a recent public filing showed that a plot of land owned by Evergrande, valued at more than $1 billion, has been taken over by a state-backed company. And once again, a tender sale for Evergrande's Hong Kong headquarters has failed to deliver any bidders. Lenders to the office tower China Evergrande Center, valued at between $1 and $1.15 billion, appointed a receiver in September to seize the asset and tender it for sale, with the deadline bid originally set at October the 31st. The tower had been pledged against a loan of $7.6 Hong Kong dollars from lenders, led by the Hong Kong subsidiary of Chinese state bank China CITIC. Now, as you might be aware if you're a long-standing follower of the channel, Evergrande was founded by a guy called Hui Ka Yan, who remains as the chairman of the business. And he recently sent a letter to all employees stating that 2023 will be a crucial year for the Evergrande Group, as it's aiming to fulfill all home deliveries to buyers. In the letter, he stated, "I trust firmly as long as the entire Evergrande staff does all of the jobs solidly, including completing construction, restoring sales, restoring operation, we will definitely be able to ensure home delivery and repay all kinds of debt and resolve risks." He went on to state that the firm had resumed construction of 732 projects across the country to deliver 301,000 homes. This figure compares to a company filing made in December, which stated that the company was involved in 631 projects to deliver 256,000 units. So 301,000 homes is obviously a significant number, but it was reported last year that Evergrande had 1.6 million unfinished homes that they needed to complete that they'd already taken payment on. So I don't think they're anywhere near completing all of their obligations. Even if these 301,000 get built, that would still leave potentially over a million homes that Evergrande needs to finalise before they're out of the woods. Until recently, China was following a zero-tolerance COVID policy, under which a whole city could be put into lockdown as soon as one case was identified. But 3 years is too long, and the people of China decided enough was enough. And we saw protests all across the country as a direct result of this. You may remember some of the videos that I posted about blank paper protests, where people were holding up blank pieces of paper because they didn't want to get arrested by putting any slogans on them, so they held up white paper instead. Anyway, the net result of all of these protests was that the Chinese authorities eventually relented, and they have now scrapped the zero tolerance policy. So we've now got a more open culture within China. This means that people can now actually travel within cities, go on holiday, all of the things that we've been taking for granted over the course of the last year or so. But the flip side of releasing all of these restrictions is that China is now experiencing its first wave of COVID infections. Now, the official figures being released by China are relatively limited. It was reported in December that around 5 million people in Shanghai had contracted the virus. However, it's estimated that up to 250 million people could have caught the virus in December in China. Let's not forget that they have a population of 1.4 billion. China and India are by far the biggest countries in the world. And as we discussed earlier in the video, this is now causing problems in terms of the workforce because as people are falling ill, they can't go to work and therefore they're struggling for manpower. So this first wave of infections is likely to run throughout January. And one of the problems that China is facing is that Chinese New Year is on January the 22nd this year. Now, what happens during Chinese New Year is that all of the mega factories that are located all across China close down and everybody returns back to their hometowns. So in China, if you work in a factory, quite often you will board there. So you'll travel to another city and live on site at that factory for 11 months of the year. But then once a year, you go back home, have a party for a couple of weeks, and then you'll go back to work. Now, the problem that China has with these parties is obviously this could be seen as a way of spreading the disease, not just amongst all of the people, but to all of the rural areas where they have less infrastructure, the hospitals are not as well equipped, and nobody is ready for a major surge. So we've got possibly the biggest super spreader event ever happening at the end of January. And that could cause a huge increase in the number of cases and obviously could lead to more deaths, infections, and problems with the workforce. So China, over the course of the first quarter of 2023, is likely to see a massive increase in the number of COVID cases, and that will have an impact both onto the workforce, but also onto the economy of China. So the outlook over the course of the next 3 months is not looking too good from a Chinese perspective. So what's the summary and conclusion today? Well, I wanted to post this video because the recent announcement of the release of all of the COVID restrictions led to an uptick in a number of markets. A lot of commentators have been positive about this development because it means that now that the shackles are off, that China can resume its growth. 2022 was a particularly poor year for China. 3% growth in relative terms for China is very, very low. They've been achieving 8 to 10% growth consistently over a long period of time. So 3% is almost the equivalent of a recession in China. So everybody's hoping that China is going to bounce back. But there are a few difficulties facing them immediately. The first is COVID infections, and that's what we're seeing right now. We saw in December a huge increase in the numbers, both officially and unofficially. The unofficial estimates are much, much bigger than the official estimates. But whichever way you look at it, this first wave of infections that China's now experiencing is similar to what we saw in the Western world back in 2020. And that did have a devastating impact on the economy for most countries around the world. So China is now having to battle that, and it's likely that they will see a drop in workforce numbers as people get ill or have to stay at home to look after relatives. And if COVID follows a similar pattern to what we saw around the rest of the world, it's likely that China will have a second wave and a third wave during the course of 2023. So that's going to be bad news from a productivity perspective. But in terms of what's happening in the global market, obviously, we're moving into a period of slowdown. So demand for Chinese goods is also reducing right now. So we've got a productivity issue coupled with a demand issue. So that's going to represent further bad news for the Chinese economy. And of course, over and above those two macro issues, we've also got the inherent problems with the Chinese housing market. The housing market really drove growth over the last 20 years. But as that market has gone into freefall in the last 6 months, we've seen a real slowdown in the Chinese economy. And that is going to be very difficult to turn around because we've got all of these companies that are laden with huge amounts of debt. And we've also got a loss of confidence from the consumers in China. They no longer see property as the star-studded investment that it once was. So overall, the summary today is that the long-term prospects for China are good now that the COVID restrictions have been released, but the short-term impact of COVID is going to be damaging for the Chinese economy, as is the slowdown in the global economy and the problems that are ongoing in the housing sector. So hopefully you've enjoyed today's video, you found it useful, informative and thought-provoking. If you've liked what I've said, then please give me a thumbs up, and thank you so much for watching this video all the way through to the end.